So welcome to the W3C credentials community. We're going to wait just a minute for people to come on over from the DID session that just ended. But in the meantime, do we have any volunteers for scribes? We need a scribe for each of our meetings, and it's always a bit of a challenge. So I know that kind of at our near our top of our list is Jeff, Moses, Troy, Gabe, Sumita, and Ted Tebow. Are any of you up for scribing today? Oh, no DID session today, so. Happens this afternoon. Go ahead and start working our way through the list. So our agenda today is posted, as it always is, to the mailing list. Here's the agenda. And quick summary for our meeting is we go through our normal announcements and progress on action items, and then we're going to be talking about the elections for the chairs. So an IT note, anyone can participate in these calls. They're open to the public. There's no charge. However, any substantive contributions to work items must be made by members of the CCG who have agreed to the full IPR agreements. You can join the CCG and agree to the agreements by going to this URL. This basically ensures that everybody is on the same page as far as their intellectual property contributions to our work items to protect everybody. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived. So this is on the public record. They're at our W3CCG website under the meetings repo. During our meetings, we use IRC to cue speakers. So if you're on the call and are not on IRC, you should use one of the many different clients that allows you to get on IRC. We ask that all attendees type present plus, that's P-R-E-S-E-N-T, and the symbol plus. This gets your name on the attendee list and in the transcript. In IRC, we use Q plus to add people to the queue with an optional reminder, for instance, Q plus to mention something, that's Q plus T-O and then some text, and that will be a reminder for what it is you wanted to talk about in the queue, and then I will call you later. If you're not on IRC, simply ask for someone to put you on the queue. During your time on the queue, please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You could always queue plus again with another comment or question. A note, this meeting is held by voice, not by IRC. The purpose of the IRC is to record, URLs and other things that are hard to do via voice. We work hard to manage a single thread of conversation so that everybody can be can participate in these calls and be heard. Please respect the group process by joining the queue when you have something to contribute. So we are back to scribe selection. Let me just check right quick to see if anybody volunteered to be a scribe. This is what we use for scribe selection. And
Hey, Christopher,
I,
looks like
yes.
Ryan has volunteered.
I saw a wave. I thought he was just saying hi.
No, he's saying,
Okay.
here, me.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you, Ryan. So scribe, Ryan, R. Grant. Can't beat me to it. Okay, moving down the agenda. We do introductions and reintroductions every week. Do we have anybody who's new to the call or has never been introduced in one of our calls? Who, Mark. Nope. Says Mark left the conference. Anybody else? On the reintroduction side, Brent, have you are you on today? Kim,
I'm here.
okay, Brent, why don't you reintroduce yourself and share with everybody, what you're up to lately, and then I will go to the queue.
Hi, folks. My name is Brent Zundell. I'm co-chair of the DID Working Group. I've been involved with this community for the last several years. I do crypto engineering and standards engineering at Evernym. And yeah, that's me.
Okay. Thank you very much. Kim, did you...
Yeah, there were two aliases that I realized we don't have them accounted for in the attendees. And so I thought this might be a good time for them to introduce themselves if they haven't already. Sorry if we just haven't updated you. So the first, I mentioned this in IRC, is N Holloway 45.
Yeah, hi, I'm Nat Holloway. I work at USA in the research group. I work with Joel and Samita and Thomas.
Great. I think you've introduced yourself before. Would you mind
yes.
including a link to like a profile page, like whether that's LinkedIn, Twitter, or something
sure.
like that?
Will
we
do.
Use that in the minutes. Thank you. And the other person is Nico SFT.
Nope,
Okay, if we
I'm
don't,
hearing.
oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
If we don't have audio, Nico, I'll if you wouldn't mind typing into IRC, then we can update you on the attendees list. That's all, Christopher.
Thank you, Kim. So, we have the okay. Next part is our announcements. So, as we are moving more to managing the community group through GitHub, this is the announcements repo. If you have any events or major things you would like to list, please submit this as a PR to this page, and this will allow us to help keep everybody up to date with what's going on. So upcoming events, Identiverse in June is doing a virtual series. I don't know how many people are participating there, but in the past, this community has had a number of people going and participating. We now have four reoccurring CCG meetings. So obviously there's this one we have today, the weekly CCG call on Tuesdays. We have two other calls on Mondays for task forces. So the Verifiable Credentials for Education Task Force meets on Mondays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. 11 Eastern Time. and the DID resolution meeting task force meets at 1 p.m. Pacific time, 4 p.m. Eastern. And then on Thursdays, there is a joint activity with DIF on secure data storage, which starts at 1 p.m. Pacific time and 4 p.m. Eastern time. Like the CCG, there is no charge for participating in any of these other meetings, but you do need to be a member of the working group and agree to the IP conditions to be able to submit any topics. Moving down the list. So the other thing we do to run the community is go to, we use this page and this repo to manage how the chairs run the community. So basically, you know, the open issues are posted there, and then each week we pick a couple of open issues for further action. This is open to the public. You're welcome to add topics or suggestions and things of that nature of what you would like to see briefly discussed in our meetings, and then we basically review these each week. So we pick two, and then I know there's one more from Manu. Manu, why don't you begin with yours in regards to the W3C and the JSON-LD?
Sure. So the JSON-LD 1.1 working group has basically finished work on the JSON-LD 1.1 specification, along with a number of other specifications around JSON-LD algorithms, framing, you know, that sort of thing. A voting period opened about a week, a little more than a week ago. It's open for roughly 1 month. In that time, the people in this group that are, or at least the people that are W3C members, or their organizations are W3C members, are expected to vote on whether or not to approve the specification for final publication. If we don't get enough votes, the specification will not be published, and we will not have a new standard. So it is very important, especially for this group, because a lot of the technology that we're building is built on top of JSON-LD 1.1. We built it with the assumption that that specification was going to get ratified. If you're a W3C member, it is very important that you vote in favor for that technology. So I'm going to drop a couple of links into IRC right now. The first one is a link to the voting poll for the JSON-LD 1.1 specification. So if you are not the advisory committee representative for your company, make sure that they get that link and tell them to vote. The vote closes around mid-June. Okay, so that's the first thing that people need to vote on. That's the JSON-LD 1.1 specification. Again, if that is not approved, very bad things happen to the work that this community is working on. The other thing is the JSON-LD 1.1 maintenance charter. So the maintenance charter basically extends the JSON-LD 1.1 working group for another a year or two. I forget which one. I just put the link into IRC. That will allow us to continue to do things like apply bug fixes and minor fixes to the specifications if we find them, and be reactive instead of having to wait 2 to 3 to 5 years and then spin up another working group to fix the specification if there are bugs in it. Okay, so if you are a W3C member, please go to both of those links and vote in favor. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. So also on our to discuss today list are these two issues. So one is the registry's MEDA process. So the credentials community group has been asked formally by the formally by the verifiable credentials working group, and also formally by the DID working group to manage a number of registries on behalf of these groups. Why do we do these registries? Because we do not have to be rechartered every 2 years. So this allows us to to be able to do things on an ongoing basis. So we had hoped that the W3C, when they were updating their process documents, would include some way to do these registries, but unfortunately that didn't happen. But there was discussions about it. So what we've done is kind of taken what they have talked about and what we've been asked to do by the two working groups and outlined it here. It's in the section, let's see, where is the section? Kim, I thought we had a separate section. Did I not have the right link in the agenda?
I'm looking at aliases and I'm not sure where we are. Can you give me some more context?
Yes, we had what our current, I'm looking at the issue on how we do registries and the meta process, and there was a heading that I'm trying to go to that where there was some discussion about that, and I'm not actually seeing that heading.
just
in other words, we had it, that link, there was a hard link in there to the particular section that you wanted us to look at, and the hard link disappeared. So now I don't remember where in this document that those changes were.
Oh, it's just the very last section. I think the ongoing community draft.
Okay, I see. So, clearly this is, an item that we need to be more clear on. So, under our new charter, we have the ability to define how we handle work items and task items, et cetera. These are kind of in the category of ongoing documents. So I would like to see some, people that can help us, clean up our process here so that it's really clear how our registry's process work until such a time as it's been decided on for the W3C as a whole. Moses, I think you have a separate item. Is your topic about this, about the registries process?
No.
Okay, so I'll hold that for now. Manu, is this about the registries process? Okay, go ahead.
Oh, well, sorry. No, that was about the JSON-LD thing.
But
okay. There is a subset of this that Dan Burnett and I worked on for the CCG process where we do expect that we're going to have to maintain a registry. So there's some overlap there, and we were able to get together and kind of chat about how that might work. The other thing of note is that the DID working group has had to put an enormous amount of effort into their registries process, and it looks like everything's converging. So that's good news. What I'm suggesting is that we may be able to just reuse effectively what Dan and I came up with for the kind of the CCG-VCWG process, coupled with the DID working group registries process. It feels like those things, there's a sane way to do this without putting a tremendous burden on the CCG. That's it.
Okay. So in any case, as that emerges, either put a link or the text into that Google Doc, because that's kind of what we're going to be basing. Obviously, we need to move this all to respect and all of that once we have a final work item process, but that's kind of our placeholder Google Doc. Want to go to the next issue, which is our oldest issue. It's issue number 3, which has been going on for a long time, which is an update to the RSA signature spec suite. We had a volunteer at one point from Factum to update it, and we basically have no volunteers for this work item. So the chairs have discussed this before. We wanted to start purging work items. Unless there is some volunteers to keep this work item going, we're going to close this particular, archive this particular repo and remove it from our registries list. So, because this has been going on for a couple years of not being updated and it's not accurate. So unless there is someone who wants to take that on, we're going to be turning it off in the next couple of weeks. So any comments or thoughts on this registry? Manu, go ahead.
Yeah, just to point out that it is going to be unavoidable that this crypto suite ends up being used in the DID working group work. Let me put it this way. There are many, many enterprise deployments today that only use RSA. They haven't upgraded to the ED25519 stuff. There are implementations already out for this suite. What's missing is documentation. So my concern is that, if we archive it here, there will be no community working on it. I think the issue is more the all the editors that could work on it are very busy with the DID spec and encrypted data vaults and stuff like that. So it makes me sad if we are going to archive it, because at that point we will have stuff deployed that does not, we won't have a spec for the stuff that's deployed. So I'm just putting that out there as, one of the people.
I don't know
that,
what to do.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
We're in a bad situation because it's usually me that updates those suites, and I'm completely underwater with other work in other groups.
And we recognize your hard work for this community, so that's not the issue. It's just, at this point, it's incorrect, and as Ori has pointed out, there are other things out there, and I feel like it would be better for us to mark it as archives, maybe after pointing to some other things, maybe Ori can add a PR to the top saying, this is deprecated at this point, there are further discussions, and here is a JWS 2021. Or whatever the community feels like the right thing is to do. Ori, can you say a little bit more about your link and, where we're at on RSA?
Sure. So, I was there when Carl from Factum volunteered for this item. I think generally of RSA, those suites of the older variants, like RSA 2017, RSA 2018, I would just not expect there to ever be documentation for them at this point. And I think it's totally fine to mark them as archived, recommend, you know, upgrades, you know, to things that have documentation. And I think we should do that. It's worth noting that Mastodon and, you know, a lot of the ActivityPub stuff will probably continue to support that old undocumented stuff possibly forever now. So we should just all be super careful to make sure that we have stuff documented as we go next time, because once you ship without documentation, you never get it back.
Right. Okay. Do you mind taking a quick, you know, overview, add it to the top, and so that we can kind of close this item for now?
Is that issue
I'm asking you to write the documentation. it's issue number 3, I think.
Yeah.
There it is. Okay. So we went through 2 issues. Moses, you're next on the queue.
Hi, everybody. I'm just letting you know that my co-author in our paper for Science, which was, I think, the first time the term decentralized ID or DIDs were written, he's trying to log into the call, and he might give it a call in later, and if he doesn't, we'll try to do it next week. But here's the link for the article, and if you have any questions, we're available. You can just, you know, email me and I'll get you in contact with him. But he's still trying to log in right now. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks.
So this is Science, the notable
it's the
journal.
It's the Science Journal.
And the title of the paper is Blockchain Facilitated Sharing to Advance Outbreak R&D. So anyhow, the link is there, and thank you for sharing that to the community. So that takes us through our regular list of topics, and now we move on to our item of the day, which is elections. So roughly 4 years ago, when the verifiable credentials task force had moved from a task force to being a genuine working group, Manu asked me to take over as chair of this group, and I had suggested that Kim join as well, so she very graciously joined, not knowing, either of us really not knowing what exactly that meant. and then, you know, less than a year later, you know, being overwhelmed by the amount of work there was, Joe joined us. And so for the last 3 years, we have been running it as a team, and have very much enjoyed working together and supporting the community. And one part of that was updating the charter, and lo and behold, you know, turns out, you know, Joe as a third chair wasn't technically permitted by the charter, and we were supposed to have elections every 2 years and all this kind of stuff. So we've cleaned up the charter. The charter's been approved. We have an elections process. We have a lot of other things. And what I said was that I think it's good that we bring some more leadership into the community. And because of that, I am not running for re-election. I will probably nominate myself in one of the upcoming elections, take a year off or so, so that we can have some more leadership and grow some leadership in this community. So the nominations were, and the process and everything were announced a couple of weeks ago, and then the deadline for nominations was last night. As of right now, there are three seats that are open only in this first election under the new charter. There was no one else contesting seat A. So Kim Hamilton is the seat A co-chair for another year. And we only had one nomination for the three-year seat, which was Wayne, which is seat C. So Wayne is as the only person nominating for that particular seat is now chair for the next 3 years under that seat. Before we talk about seat B, Kim, would you like to say anything about being nominated, self-nominated, and continuing, and then Wayne, if you're here, we'd love to hear from you as well, and then we'll go to the seat B discussion.
Sure, yeah, I'll go first. So thank you, everyone. I'm very excited, and as I mentioned, my nomination email, a big focus of this year for me personally will be supporting the new chair. So welcome, Wayne. I'm very excited to have you. We've been talking about planning already, and I think we have some good things ahead for CCG. So I'm focusing on, a lot of the community growing and hopefully inclusivity. And we have some plans for trying to onboard not just the new CCG chairs, but support leadership opportunities for the broader community. Yes, I'm very excited to get started and looking forward to it.
Okay. Wayne?
Hey, this is Wayne here. Thanks so much for electing me your chair implicitly. And just wanted to talk about my goals as chair, and those are mainly to, one, do what we can at the W3C community level to increase global adoption. The next one is better decentralized ecosystem alignment. Everyone is doing a lot of important things. We have organizations like Hyperledger and the DEF and OpenID all like within the same sphere, and figuring out what those bilateral relationships are. How can we work on what's most valuable to each of us? That's going to be another priority. And lastly, I'm looking into starting up an APAC call. There are many governments in APAC including South Korea and Australia and enterprises there who are very interested in the technology of our group. And if we don't take the opportunity to educate and include people properly, then we're going to get fragmented standards. So taking care of that early and often is definitely something I'd want to do. My background is I worked at Consensus for a number of years, delivering decentralized identity-related projects, and my background is in software engineering and project management.
Thank you very much. So congratulations, Kim and Wayne. Wayne, we'd love to have you join this Thursday's call that the chairs do. Introduce you to the process and all of that. So we have one other seat. Seat B is a two-year seat. It is held by Joe Andrew. We have one additional nominee, which is Heather, we will have them both introduce themselves. But let me, before that begins, explain what will happen. Basically, the chairs have to choose if there is an election, and there will be for seat B, we choose an election mechanism and announce that to the list. Basically, a week after that election mechanism will be used to select who the final chair is. So. We've not done this before, so we're still in the process of all the final details, but you will see them to the list in the next a few days, possibly after the Thursday co-chair's call on what that process will be. So we have Joe, you know, has been a co-chair for the last 3 years, and we would like Joe to introduce and talk about his nomination, and then we'll let Heather do the same.
Great.
Joe?
Thanks, Chris. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. So I'm Joe Andrew, and I run a small consultancy called Legendary Requirements, focused on requirements engineering for digital identity and blockchain systems. As just been mentioned by Chris, I've been co-chair with him and Kim for the last few years. I'm an editor on the use case documents for both verifiable credentials and decentralized identifiers. I'm also the creator of the notion of functional identity and author of the recently published Five Mental Models of Identity. I'm the current lead author of the upcoming rubric for decentralization of DID methods. And I'm currently a board member, treasurer, facilitator at Rebooting the Web of Trust. So that's sort of who I am. Basically, after 25 years of professional software development, I realized there was a huge gap between the real world needs that were expressed by the international community at ID 2020 and the other half of the room that was full of technologists who were claiming that they had solutions to a problem that had not really been well defined yet. And that catalyzed me to step into that gap and help deal with requirements independent of technology, right, to really get to the bottom of the human requirements of these systems. As a co-chair, I see our job as chairs as facilitating this conversation in the community. Standards making is messy. It's largely a process of memorializing consensus, and that's nonlinear and can be very challenging to move from ideation through a bunch of people trying to get their different ideas in. And our job is to hold the space for those different voices so that they can participate. That's what I've tried to do. I'm proud of the work we've done over the last 3 years. We helped create the DID working group, and we published several notes. And I would be eager to continue this work.
Great. Thank you very much. And thank you for your service in the last 3 years. Heather, come tell us your story and why you would like to be co-chair.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Awesome. Great. Well, good morning and afternoon to everyone. I'm Heather of Essence, and my company is the Purple Tornado. I founded it in 2006 after working in the tech industry for like 10 plus years, building and launching new technology products. And I decided to throw my name in the hat as a co-chair after a lot of deliberation and talking with other folks in the community. I joined the CCG a couple years ago because I was very much interested in understanding how technology standards get built. And it seemed like a really opaque process. And as someone who had been working and helping to develop new technologies, a new technology product for like 15 years in Silicon Valley, I was like, okay, I really want to understand how the sausage is made. And I've had very mixed experiences with this community and with the standards community. And I, for a while, thought about leaving, and I did actually kind of step away. But I decided that I'd give it my last shot at changing and bringing what I think this community really needs to really make this technology successful long-term with a business ROI, and to make sure it's thought through conscientiously so that we don't create unintended consequences. Inevitably, when technologists create new technology, they are focused on the functionality of it, which is critical. It's very, very important. But because technologists are so experienced at solving the problems, they don't see the broader impact in other areas. And I know this because I worked in Silicon Valley and I believed the Kool-Aid that technology could solve everything before I became a card-carrying futurist. I went back to school and got my Master's of Science in Foresight. It's an actual legit degree. I learned 50 different methods of doing research, which includes 10 different methods of doing strategic planning to understand possible futures. And not just understand what's possible, but what's the impact of the technology in other technologies, in political, geopolitics, economics. We are living through a time in humanity that has dramatic change. And with COVID, it's even more dramatic change. And I have a track record of understanding the impact of technology and helping people navigate to make the best decisions to be successful. And so that's what I want to do. I want to bring my skills and talents to this community to take us to the next level. What does take it to the next level look like? Take it to the next level means conscious strategic planning. It's understanding what we want to accomplish together. And that includes both us as a collective community and from our businesses, as well as from the broad ecosystem. There are roles for all of us to play. It also includes, how are we going to respond to the shifting things in the world? We had no idea COVID-19 was happening, but now we have like 5 different groups jumping in, trying to understand how to use this technology to solve something. How can we be more proactive? Strategic thinking helps us be more proactive when these types of situations occur so we can better respond, having a clear understanding of the capabilities of our technologies. I'm personally interested in a couple different and pushing forward a couple different branches of where this technology can go. I believe we are still in the very, very, very early baby stages of this technology. And I'm here and I'm back and I'm running for co-chair because I truly do think that this technology, if built and developed and executed correctly and completely, can positively influence billions of people. That's what I do in my work. The areas of interest I'm really interested in is the role of non-person entities or non-humans, which includes legal identity and IoT identity. So I want to expand the kind of human-centric data and privacy models that we've had into a whole new area, IoT and NPE. I've been very much interested in supply chain and adding more data transparency to supply chain. And my research in that space has led me to the overlap or to want to explore the overlap between machine learning and, tools and artificial intelligence to make data, to prepare data for the powerful computing and analysis and understanding we can gain. I see a lot of the work that we're doing here with credentials and digital identity and decentralized identity as like a baby step, like a very early baseline of things that can be used further on. And so I want to support the thinking around those spaces. So that's personally those areas of interest I bring to the table. My background, I'm just a badass. I just get things done. I'm a level 40 GTD master. I have run my own company since 2006, and I've had some pretty big projects. In the SSI community, Kalia and I partnered, and we wrote the first published book about an introduction to SSI. It's been out for almost 2 years now. There's not been another completed entry in that space in that time. More recently, I successfully acquired funding and ran the team and produced and delivered 3 reports from DHS that went through specific use cases that are of interest to this community. I have also created films managing film crews and collecting information and data and releasing it. And also, I've been in this space for a long time. One of the first ideas that we had of building this technology was spearheaded by SWIFT, the European Banking Consortium, in this vision they had of the digital asset grid. And I collaborated with a lot of folks from the identity community to create a structure for what data is and how it could be stored in kind of a data locker type thing in 2012. And I made a film about it. One of the things that's been a challenge with all new technologies I've ever worked on is communicating its power and its practicality to non-experts. And that includes both other technologists that are not familiar with it, but also not technologists. That includes governments, venture capitalists, business owners, or companies that might want to use this technology. Over and over and over, we talk about how we wish we had this kind of information to be able to more broadly evangelize the potential possible benefits of what this technology brings. I have a track record of creating that kind of content, of communicating insidery technical information to a broader audience. And so that's what I want to bring to CCG here. I want to just take us to the next level with strategic planning to help us come up with a plan. And I would expect that whoever in the community wants to participate would participate. And I also want to increase the diversity of this community. I'm very happy that Wayne ran. I really wanted some new, fresh perspectives. And I want to bring other folks from other parts of the identity community that do not feel safe, comfortable, or welcome here yet to the conversation. And so that's why I'm running for CP. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Heather. So briefly, what the process is again from here is that within the next week, we will post how the election between these two parties will be done. And then there'll be about a week for the results of that process to be announced. So in 2 weeks, we will officially have three chairs for the CCG for the next year. And then in May, June of next year, only one seat will be available, the one that Kim is currently holding. So we want to leave a few minutes to questions of the candidates. The speaker queue is empty. Does anybody have any questions for either Joe or Heather? So I am not seeing any questions. And we were going to allow for some time for Mark to talk about his paper if there was extra time at the meeting, but it looks like we'll have to do that again next week. Here we go. Okay, so last call for questions for either of the two candidates. I am seeing none in the queue. And okay, so so the topic now is the science paper. Mark, do you want to say a little bit about your paper and go forward from there?
Sure. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Is my audio clear for you all?
Yes, it is.
Perfect. Thanks. So first of all, I'm completely new to this, so please bear with me. But I think I was invited by Moses Ma and by Kim Hamilton Duffy I think because we just published an article in Science Magazine, and it covers topics that you're well familiar with, and I have been learning about for the last few months and years even. So allow me to give you a quick introduction on myself. I'm Mark van der Waal. I'm an innovation policy researcher at the VU University in Amsterdam, focused on the life sciences and health domains. I'm currently finishing up my PhD. I have a background in biomedical sciences and in health technology assessment. So big disclaimer, I'm not a computer scientist nor a developer. But I've picked up the emerging concepts and standards that you've been working on tirelessly. I've picked them up a bit, and I've been able to translate into my field. So what we do at our university, at our research group, is study the infectious diseases domain. And this is not something that we've been doing just for the last months because of COVID, but this is something that we have been doing for several years now. And our aim has been to identify barriers to effective international cooperation in response to outbreaks of emerging or re-emerging infectious diseases. So in this trend of research, we've been collaborating with global public health experts, for instance, at the Center for Infectious Disease Control of the Dutch National Institute. And I think it was in late 2016 when my professor happened to sit next to Moses Ma on a flight from San Francisco to Amsterdam. And Moses wouldn't stop talking about blockchain technology and how it could be applied to the management of intellectual property rights. Now, this all sounded a bit far-fetched at first, but something triggered my professor. And I think that you could say that Moses really infected our research group with blockchain thinking and these interesting concepts. And so I've been learning about them for several years, communicating, for instance, with Moses Ma, who's a co-author on the publication that just appeared in Science last week. I'll make sure to drop the links in the chat right afterwards. So it triggered something because conflicts over what trust issues are really at the root of many problems that we see currently, also for COVID, problems that we see that hamper an effective outbreak response. So it's what we basically need is lots of different diverse actors sharing data, sharing materials as quickly as possible to ensure a timely response in terms of effective public health measures, but also in terms of the development of vaccines, diagnostic technologies, or antivirals. And there are several barriers, and these all relate to competitive stakes, private competitive stakes. For instance, you have academia that, of course, need to focus on getting their publications out, just like I just got my publication out. This is a big incentive for academia. So they have a big disincentive to just disseminate their research data. Well, and we describe several of these barriers that are based on years of research in this field. And these really apply well to the concepts that you've been working on, for instance, decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials. So to cut a long story short, because I'll just drop the link in the chat and I'm happy to answer any questions. I'll leave my contact information as well. We, as a thought experiment, we conceptualize a future system that is based on blockchain technology, that integrates decentralized identifiers, that integrates on-chain permissioning, and of course also verifiable credentials, and integrates these concepts with more traditional systems that are currently in place for the storage and exchange of, for instance, genetic sequences of pathogens, or the exchange of pathogen samples. And we show how this system and how these mechanisms enabled by a blockchain can really shape a sort of trust layer underneath these existing systems, and how these may really overcome these barriers that have been hampering infectious disease response, and are still hampering infectious disease response in the context of COVID. So This is just a brief talk. I will leave the links in the chat, and I'm happy to answer any questions. We're also thinking about, of course, about follow-on papers. This was just a start, just a thought experiment. It remains very high level and very conceptual. And I'm sure I'm convinced that everybody in this conference has great ideas about what will be interesting topics for future research. So I would be really happy to communicate with you and think about interesting follow-on projects here. So thanks for having me and for dropping into this conference.
Thank you. Do put your email, make your email available.
I'll do that.
Moses, there really is only time for one more comment. Do you want to yield to Adrian, or do you have something short you can say?
No, yield to Adrian. I'll just type it into the chat.
Okay, thanks.
Just Adrian,
go ahead.
Quick question to the authors, both of you. What do you see, how do you see reputation, which is bound in what you were saying, academic as well as everything else, fitting in with this community and decentralized identifiers?
Yeah, so I think that reputation is a very interesting concept in this context. So reputation is key, of course, for academic stakeholders. But also for others in this space. We haven't zoomed in on this in the paper. It was out of the scope of the current paper, but in the supplementary materials, and I will also provide a link to supplementary materials, we discussed that verifiable credentials could be used to attribute ratings of trust or ratings of reputation or quality to actors that commit R&D records or data to the system that we conceptualize. So it is something that we touch upon, and it is something that we would like to explore a bit better, maybe with participants of this conference in the future. But these, well, it's very information dense. If you read the paper, you'll notice that, and we couldn't really get into details to these parts, but it's an important topic. Definitely, if you talk about the quality of data, the quality of research, the quality of genetic sequences that are being committed to a system, you want some sort of a reputation system or a peer review system, as is currently in place in the scientific publishing system. You want something like that as well. So these are interesting topics for future research.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the call with Wayne once again as co-chair-elect. We would like to, the current chairs would like to invite you to come on Thursday and help us talk about the actual voting process, and then we will formally seat all the new chairs in approximately 2 weeks, and I move into someone who will be added to the potential scribe list, because I've been avoiding it for a couple of years in this group by being a co-chair every 3 weeks. So. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for your time, and we will talk next week.